a world filled with fast-paced living and constant demands on the aging body, it's easy to forget some of the simplest yet most essential elements of our well-being: hydration and nutrients. As you know, when I'm not in the studio recording a podcast or in the gym or out in the scrub hunting, putting rounds down range, I'm somewhere in the world on a security gig, putting in the hard yards, ending up on TikTok. So the legends that get some keep me advancing forward: Jocko Fuel Supplements. More specifically, I've been smashing the Jocko Hydrate Sachets, which helps me replenish my electrolytes and other critical vitamins while boosting energy and supporting recovery. Also, just like my kids, my appetite for veggies goes as far as hot chips from the Colonel. However, every morning I'll mix a scoop of Jocko Greens Jocko Creatine into water, which helps me supplement my lack of and delivers all the nutrients for better gut health, immune support, cognitive function, and physical performance. And not to mention, tastes bloody good. So head over to www.getsome.com.au and use the code ZEROLIMITS all in caps for a discount. I'll leave you with this for the day: hard work, clean fuel, stronger, faster, smarter, better. Let's go.
You're listening to a Zero Limits podcast brought to you by Iron and Lead Cartel for all your fitness and streetwear apparel and health supplements. Hosted by Australian veterans Matt and Shane, we're here to give you the motivation for you to complete any goal you set your mind to. On these podcasts, we're going to be speaking to high-charging people with the Zero Limit mindset that never say no. Let's go.
All right, Shane, on today's podcast, we're speaking to Yonel Dorelis. He, or better known as Yogi,
Yogi Bear, I guess,
a lot easier to say.
Yeah.
He reached out to us, and it was through Mike, obviously.
Pararescue jumper.
Yeah, Pararescue. Yeah. Mike Moroney. Episode, I'll have to have a look, I forgot.
High teens.
Yep. Yogi is a pilot. Helo pilot
in all three services.
All three services, yeah. Which is pretty hectic. You know, that's from, you know, from what we can read. Yeah, let's just get straight into it. Let's hit him up, because, and you know, he's an actor now as well, which is pretty hectic. He was on some TV show. Like, you know, the first thing we do generally when we do get a guest on, we do a bit of research, and the research that I have found is, you know,
he has Google an IMDb count.
Yeah, you Google his name and his IMDb, and which he's been on New Amsterdam, which is a TV show, which I have seen. I haven't watched it. I'm not that geeky. No,
I don't know what the fuck it's about, but
anyway. I think it's like Grey's Anatomy type style.
Right.
Yeah.
In Amsterdam? No.
Yeah. Dr. Dreamy.
Dr. Dreamy.
Maybe he is Dr. Dreamy. Maybe, yeah. So let's get into it. Yogi. All right, Shane, on today's Zero Limits podcast, we have a former US Marine. After, you know, being a US Marine, he thought, you know, let's get back into it. You know, a podcast I was listening to, he actually was a college student. He went for a fly one day with some derelict pilot and sputtered the helicopter in. And a normal person would have said, you know, after a helicopter crash, I don't want to be a pilot, or, you know, I don't even want to get back in a helicopter.
Yeah.
But this guy, he not only got back into a helicopter, he became one of the, you know, one of the best pilots out there, you know, in regards to EMS and, you know, flying throughout Iraq and Afghanistan, you know, obviously saving countless lives.
100%.
Let's get him on and we'll have a chat. Done. And see what he's got to say. Let's introduce Yogi.
Yogi, how you going, buddy?
Hey, guys, how you doing? Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
No, appreciate your time, mate.
I don't know if I'm one of the best pilots out there. I'm probably the world's okayest pilot. But I appreciate the kind words.
No, awesome, man. Well, let's get into it.
New York City, as you can probably tell by my accent. Born and raised, you know, grew up with a single working mom. I'm sure like a lot of the guys you talk to, and I've noticed this kind of a trend with a lot of the military guys. I was fascinated with the military from as far back as I can remember,
yeah.
You know, especially with the idea of flying. And I don't come from a military family per se. You know, my uncles on my mom, because I'm a little older, they were the World War II generation. You know, they fought in the war, but, you know, as soon as it was done, they went back to their lives. And you know, my mom, honestly, typical Jewish mom, wanted me to be a doctor or a lawyer, but I was just not about that. And then, you know, I started getting kind of fascinated with the Marine Corps. And so for most of my life, my focus was on becoming a Marine pilot.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't have any magic story or anything. Just, I saw the Sands of Iwo Jima with John Wayne as a little kid. And I was like, I don't know who these guys are, but I think that's for me, you know? And,
yeah, right.
I mean, I don't think that's a unique story. So growing up, I was, you know, my mom was a working mom and I went to public school, which, and I don't want to confuse you guys with England, but I know public school in England is actually private school. Well, public school in the States is public school, you know, so you're there with all the other maniacs. And I was not the greatest kid growing up. You know, I dabbled in stupidity, but when I got to college, you know, I started focusing on that a little more. And actually the first time I went in to apply to be a Marine officer, they threw me out.
Yep.
You know, cause I came in there, I think I was wearing a wife beater, you know, just did not make the impression of a guy that fits the bill to become an officer. So the guy basically told me, you know, you need to learn how to dress, how to, you know, make a good impression, maybe work on your vocabulary and not sound like you're a gangster. And I took it to heart though. You know, at the time I was crestfallen, you know. Yeah. I was like, oh man, my dream is falling apart in front of my eyes. And basically he said, come back in a year. And if you're serious, come back in a year and make that good impression. And I took it to heart. I did. And, you know, it's before the internet. So I had to go to the library. I spoke to friends of my mom's who were businessmen and successful people and just, you know, tried to set myself up to make a good impression. And the following year, I was accepted my sophomore year of college. And I was in this program called the Platoon Leaders Class. It's a really cool program. The Marines still have it. You go to training in the summer and then you go back to your regular college life. You don't really have to do anything like they do in ROTC or anything. So it was really cool. The only dumb thing I did was you can split it up into two summers,
yeah,
or do it one summer. Well, I was a moron and thought, well, let me split up into two summers so I can have half my summer to go to the beach and do all that. What I didn't realize is it took every fiber of my being to go back the next summer. Cause it was just the idea of going through that again.
Yeah.
Was just horrifying me. So I did it, got commissioned a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps, went through all the training, went to what's called the basic school, where all new second lieutenants go. It's about a 6-month course. Basically learned how to be an infantry officer and all the administrative stuff associated with being an officer, the you know, performance reports, all the other stuff you'll be doing. And when that's over, you go to your various MOSs, your occupational specialties. And those of us who were supposed to go to flight school, they said, basically, sucks to be you guys. We have too many pilots on both ends of the pipeline. Yeah, we're going to stick you where we need you for about 2 years till slots open up again. So I had orders to the 7th Truck Battalion in Camp Pendleton. I was not the happiest of campers, but I was rolling with it. One of the lieutenants in my class, his dad was a Navy admiral. And in America, naval aviation encompasses the Navy, the Marine Corps, and the Coast Guard. So he walked over to his counterpart in the Marine Corps, kind of said, hey, what the WTF is going on? They told him, long story short, they worked out a drug deal. About 150 of us switched over to the Navy. And I was a naval officer. And then I was in flight school about a week later.
Yeah, right.
Muddled my way through flight school. Pensacola is it's a double-edged sword. It's a really cool place. You know, the program's very challenging, but you're also at one of the nicest beach resorts in the United States.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of distraction. And you know, no one's really you know, as an officer, there's no one up your ass 24/7. So you're on your own as far as making the program work for you. So you can tend to get a little distracted down there and make it a little tough on yourself, i.e. like I did. You know, there were some guys who never went out, studied all the time. I probably should have been one of those guys. I wasn't. But I did muddle my way through, got my wings as a helicopter pilot, which is exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
Flew helicopters in the Navy, was stationed in your neck of the woods in the Philippines for about 2.5-3 years.
Yeah, right. Just before we get into the pilot side of things, now I was listening to a podcast earlier in regards to you being in college and getting you had about 48 flight hours up and you were just going to get some training. And mate, run us through that story. This is how you become a pilot. You know, this is how you wanted to become a pilot.
This is a good one.
Yeah. So, I had some fixed wing training, but I've always been kind of fascinated with helicopters. You know, I grew up literally watching the Vietnam War on TV, obviously, and the Huey is just this iconic part of that, right? And I was fascinated with it. And then a buddy of mine, friend of their family, was visiting them. He had been he was flying helicopters in Hawaii as a tour pilot, and it flew in the military. So he regaled me with all these stories. And I was like, this helicopter thing seems cool. Let me take a lesson and see what it's like. So I save up my money and I go to this place, Long Island Helicopters, and I pay for a lesson. I think it was 120. I don't remember what it was, but it was pretty expensive even back then.
Yeah.
And it's in a Bell 13, which is the helicopter. You guys seen MASH, right?
Yeah.
The show.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's that's the helicopter. So we go up and we go flying. And the guy's showing me, he lets me fly it. Obviously, I'm terrible at it. So he's just saying, okay, I'll show you a few things. He shows me the rotation. Pure and simple, if you lose an engine in a helicopter, there's a clutch that'll disengage. The rotor will freewheel, and you can get it to provide enough energy and inertia. So hopefully you'll cushion the landing to, at the very least, a survivable landing. If not, in the case of some aircraft, a really nice, easy landing. So he's showing me a few of these. And about the third one, I'm like, I just think he should flare by now. But, you know, ignorance is bliss. And I'm like, fuck, this guy knows what he's doing. You know, he flew in Nam, blah, blah, blah. He must know what he's doing. And so watching the ground rush up at us, he flares. And all of a sudden, it was bang, boom, bing, bing, just bouncing around. And all of a sudden, everything stops. I look over at him because I'm like, what the fuck just happened? And is it okay to use four?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Oh, fuck you.
He's out there going, oh, shit. Oh, shit. So I look at what he's looking at, and the tail rotor and a section of the drive shaft is sticking out of the sand. And then we get out of the helicopter, and that tail boom is bent up at like a 45-degree angle. So now I'm a dumbass. I'm like, oh, this is fucking cool. You can crash in a helicopter and walk away. I really want to fly these things, right? And then another dumbass move. Instead of going, oh, shit, my neck hurts, right? I'm like, oh, hey, you guys aren't going to charge me for this lesson, right? I'm like, no, we'll give you another one. But I'm too, because I should have been like, oh, my neck hurts.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm an idiot college student. But I come away from that thinking, shit, you can crash in helicopters. So if I get shot down, it'll be no problem. I won't have to eject, you know, just all these idiotic things because I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Right. And so I was like, after that, believe it or not, that incident sold me on helicopters.
That's insane.
But that was the first time I've been in a helicopter and we crashed.
You know, any normal person would probably never get back in a helicopter ever again.
All of the aircraft at that.
I'm like, that shit was cool. We crashed. Yeah. I'm flying those fucking things. I'm not a normal person. Anyone will tell you that. Most specifically, if you were to talk to my wife, she'd certainly be quick to tell you that.
But yeah.
I was sold on it after that, man. And fast forward to, you know, now I'm an aviator. I spoke to a guy who flew those extensively, and he basically said, you just lucked out, because if it had rolled over, the way that aircraft's constructed, there's something called a firewall that, you know, keeps the transmission. Yeah. And that thing's very thin, made of aluminum, basically, tinfoil. He said, so the tranny probably would have come into the cockpit, at the very least sprayed you with hot oil, if not just killed you outright. So, but I ignorance is bliss, and you don't know these things. And I was just like, this is cool. And honestly, I still think, like, given certain situations, you might be better off in a helicopter, and others maybe not so much, but it's still like I'm 50-50 on if I was 100% wrong or not.
After the crash, did you go back home and tell your mother?
Told my girlfriend.
Oh, right.
I went home and told her. I said, it's really cool. No, I didn't tell my mom. I didn't tell my mom. I told her later, years later, but that time I was like, nah, she doesn't need to know.
Yeah.
I put my mom through hell as a kid.
Yeah.
And I did. And actually, when I had teenage daughters, right, and thankfully, my daughters look like their mother, beautiful girls. And they're 5 years apart. I dealt with every manner of asshole you can imagine.
Yeah.
Right. And they were not angels per se. So When, you know, in the height of all this, I called my mom. I said, hey, I'm really sorry for being an asshole when I was, because I put my mom, had to come get me my first day of high school. She had to come. I got thrown out. They said, don't come back till your mother comes back. I mean, I put my mom through hell. So when I got older, I started to avoid putting her through that as much. And then when I got in the military, I didn't tell her a lot of, you know,
nah, definitely.
She would call and say, what's going on? I'm like, ah, it's no big deal. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. You know?
Forget about it.
Forget about it. Yeah, cool. We'll obviously we'll get back to
naval aviation.
The start of it.
Yeah. So yeah, I was a Navy pilot. I flew CH-53Es, which is the biggest aircraft we have in the U.S. military. It was a beast. I loved it. Was stationed in the Philippines. We did what was called vertical onboard deliveries. We were kind of a jack of all trades. We just hauled trash and people wherever. So it was kind of cool because you never knew what you were going to do on any given day. I mean, I've, done a lot of hurricane relief, both in Asia and the States and the Caribbean. I remember once taking an 18,000-pound bulldozer up in the mountains of the Philippines because they had like a mudslide or something there. Just it was a cool job. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. Then I came back to Virginia and spent another two and a half, three years there. And, I'd had my first child and wasn't as keen on being gone a lot. So I thought maybe I wanted to go into the corporate world.
Yeah.
And I got out of the Navy. And that was, another. I'm good. As we talk, you'll see I'm a guy who's made a lot of impulsive and dumb decisions in his life. And that was one of them. I mean, I think I was about a month into that job where I was like, man, I made a really big mistake. I don't like this at all. And I left that again without having a backup plan. But luckily, my buddy who I grew up with bailed me out and gave me a job in the theater business in New York, selling tickets in the box office on Broadway. Now, that's actually a pretty good job. It's a union job, pays very well. And it was actually a pretty good job. And I just missed flying and kind of missed the military. So I shotgunned all my paperwork out to the various reserve and National Guard units near New York City. And the Army Guard came back first. So I started flying helicopters in the Army Guard, Army National Guard. I became a warrant officer. I went from being a full Navy lieutenant, which is equal to a captain in the Army, down to a warrant officer. I got to fly the old Hueys, which was amazing. Like, I'm so thankful I got to fly that iconic aircraft. I mean, we didn't do much in my guard unit because they were getting phased out and the Blackhawks were coming in. So we didn't do anything cool tactical wise. Basically, on our drill weekends, we'd fly around looking for places to have lunch.
That's awesome.
These old warrant officers that I flew with, they'd all been in Vietnam. All were highly decorated guys. They were cops, firemen, lawyers, doctors. They did it because it was fun.
Yeah.
They really didn't give two shits and bag of donuts about any of the military stuff. So we'd get briefed on, a lieutenant would brief us on what they want us to do. And the warrant officer, yes, sir, we'll take care of that. He'd leave. He'd go, we're not doing that. We're flying down Atlantic City. We're going to the all-you-can-eat buffet. And then we're flying back.
That's fucking awesome.
It was a lot of fun. And I got to fly this, I'm really thankful I got to fly this iconic aircraft, which for me was cool because that was the aircraft that kind of made me fall in love with helicopters.
Yeah.
Fly that was cool. So I did that for about 4.5 years. And then also out on Long Island, there was an Air National Guard unit, which flew the Pave Hawks, was a rescue unit. And they had an opening and I applied. And again, surprisingly, I got in because it was pretty competitive. My pedigree wasn't near as good as some of the other guys, but I got in the unit, started doing that mission, fell in love with it, fell in love with the aircraft. And I was there about a year and a half. I was doing some training in New Mexico. And some of the active duty guys were like, hey, man, the Air Force is really short pilots. And I was like, really? And they just happened to be the guy who did the assignments for the Air Force was there just having meetings and talking to guys about their next assignments. And I grabbed them in the hallway and asked them if I could come on active duty. And he was like, yeah, put in the paperwork. If your unit, approves, I'll approve it. I did. My unit approved it. I got on active duty and then I ended up staying for another 14 years till I retired. Now, obviously, there's a lot of stuff in between.
Yeah, of course.
That's where I went to war.
Yep.
I love the mission. It was a great mission. And my timing, I guess, depending on how you look at it, couldn't have been better because, less than 3 years after I was in the Air Force, we were at war.
Yeah.
And, I mean, we deployed fairly quickly. Our first group of guys left the United States for Pakistan, not even before the new year of 2002. And then we relieved them shortly, like January of 2002, we were in Pakistan. And, you know, my timing again was good or bad, depending on how you look at it. I got to fly an Operation Anaconda. I got to fly a couple of really crazy missions. And,
yeah. We'll touch on those in a second. Can you just run us through the day of September 11, 2001?
Yeah, that was a little weird for me too, because again, I'm from New York City.
Exactly.
My brother's a commodities trader. He works in the World Trade Center. He survived both World Trade Center bombings, the one in 93 and 9/11. I had worked for him while I was in college. So essentially, that area is, I know, like the back of my hand. I mean, you know, I used to go there daily like anybody else. So for me, obviously, it'd be an understatement to say I took the whole thing a little personal.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But I was in Vegas. My wife had some surgery, so I was taking leave. I was actually taking like 3 or 4 days leave. And I get up, and I'm a news junkie. I'm trying to get away from it now because it's gotten so stupid. But back in those days, I turn on the news first thing in the morning. And first thing, there's the World Trade Center, smoke coming out of it. I'm like, what the hell is that? And they're like, a plane ran into it. I'm like, clear. There's not a cloud in the sky, man. I mean, go back and watch the tapes. I mean,
yeah. No,
it was not. And I'm looking at it, I'm going, and they're like, someone accidentally ran into it. And I'm, you know, as a pilot, you're just like, what?
Yeah.
How does some moron run into the World Trade Center? And then they're like, we think it's a small plane. I'm like, that's a lot of fire and a lot of fuel, you know. I'm like, And as I'm trying to make sense of all this, I see this other plane coming across the screen. And I'm like, you know, in that seconds, your mind's working in slow motion. I'm like, that doesn't look right.
Yeah.
He's kind of low. And then I'm like, it dawns on me. I'm like, oh shit. And then bam, right in the second one hit. So I know immediately, obviously this is an attack of some sort. And I wake my wife up. I tell her what's happening. She goes, I'm not sending the kids to school today. I'm like, fine. I said, but I think I need to go into work. I said, I do. I think I might, you know, and she's like, okay, do what you got to do. And, it's pandemonium. Took me 3 hours to get on the base. The base wasn't even letting people on with their vehicles. I had to park my car like 3 blocks from the base and then get through the gate. And there were guys running people to their units in pickup trucks, just guys using their own trucks to just. And it was pandemonium. I mean, we had our helicopters armed and we were flying around in armed helicopters in Vegas. There were rumors that somebody was going to come and blow up the Hoover Dam. It just was a little, you know, as you can imagine, it was just kind of pandemonium for a few days till everybody could catch their breath. But yeah, I thought my brother was dead because I'm in this traffic jam and I hear that the towers collapsed. And I remember thinking I didn't freak out. You're in that sort of, I was already in that compartmentalized state of, so I'm like, oh, well, I guess my brother's dead. I'll have to figure out how to tell my mom later. But I have to get on base first and figure out what's going on here. And then I had tried to call him earlier, so he knew. He called my house, and my daughters called me and told me he was okay. But there was a period of time where I was like, I thought he was dead, and I was just like, I thought maybe I assumed there was going to be more attacks on New York.
Yeah.
So I was like, it was weird because I wanted to get back there.
Yeah.
But I also wanted to I had a job to do, and then even, there was sort of a lull and I was like, can I take a couple of days leave and go to ground zero and help out? My boss was like, nah, cause shit's about to happen.
Yeah.
You know? And he's like, he goes, believe me. And he goes, I don't want to be trying to hunt you down, you know, when that happened. And in retrospect, it's probably good. Cause who knows, I could have got sick or, you know, whatever that, exactly. All the things that happened to those guys there. But at the time it was pretty bad for me. You know, I mean, I never imagined a million years that anyone would attack New York, even though they'd done it before with the, I just,
not to that extent,
I didn't think they would get that stupid. And and they did, you know, I mean, I should say stupid. They was a success for the most part. Just luckily we were able to get everyone out. You know, as many people, you know, we had the time to evacuate those buildings to some extent, or God forbid worse, but could have been exponentially worse.
In regards to your brother, what floor is he on? in the buildings.
He worked in 7 World Trade Centers. So he worked in one of the buildings on the adjacent externals. To the two yeah. tall buildings.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Right? But they evacuated them, and then he was evacuating as people were jumping. Wow. So he unfortunately got to see some pretty bad things as far as people hitting the ground, and yeah, it's that messed with him a little bit.
Yeah,
you know, he has some bad memories from that day demons. For sure.
Yeah, you know, definitely not a good time. That
talking to him recently, it's interesting. He and I had lunch, and he really told me some things he had spoken about before, like just wandering and, you know, had to get a ride across the river. It was just the ordeal of trying to get home for him was just kind of just crazy, you know. No cell phone service, so you couldn't let anyone know what was going on.
Yeah.
He had lost his phone, so he had to borrow. I mean, you go from this successful business guy making, you know, working in the finance world to now you're like almost a refugee.
Yeah.
You know, in your own city for a few hours.
Yeah.
I think that impacted him a little more than I ever thought.
Yeah, definitely. It's one of those days that, you know, I guess no one will ever forget. And, as we've spoken out with other guests, you know, it's one of those days that it changed every military around the world, especially ours, yours, and, you know, the Brits. And
I know all our safe bases went from Alpha to Bravo, and they never will go back to Alpha again, like our state of readiness, want to call it.
You know, I keep up with things. I mean, you guys have had some issues in Australia too. I mean, I remember you had that,
we have.
Attack in Sydney, and you've had a couple other incidents. And
we've had a lot of scares.
You go through the same issues with some of the segments of the immigrant population.
100%.
That we go through. Yeah, I mean, so you guys have to be on your toes there too. And you're in a rough neighborhood, man.
Yeah,
you are right now. So
yeah, especially with China breathing down our necks.
China, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are in a rough neighborhood. So you guys got to be on the ball. But listen. Don't let me leave this podcast without telling you my Vegemite story.
Yeah.
All right, because I got a good one.
Could be the end one.
I've had the opportunity to work with a few with the Aussies a little bit, and always been awesome.
Tell us now, actually.
Good Vegemite story.
Yeah, let's get into that story now.
Yeah, we're already here.
Midway story.
All right, so it's after Operation Anaconda, and one of my PJs, Hiram Resto, had been a reconnaissance Marine before he came to the Air Force. And he just, as happens, that's the thing about special ops, we run into these Aussie, I don't know if they're SAS or Commando Regiment, I don't remember. But, you know, high-speed dudes, right? And he runs into these guys. And they know each other from some previous exercise that they did together, you know, way back when. So it's all reminiscing, yada, yada, how you guys doing, blah, blah, blah. So I walk over and I there was a segment of the pilots that just a few of us seemed to get along better with the PJs than others. We just maybe were a little more mischievous than some of the other guys and stuff. But I was always real friendly with all the J's. So Hiram introduced me to these guys and we're bullshitting and you know, they're breaking out your rations, right? And
yeah.
So I start asking them about it. And then I'm like, so what? And, you know, I grew up in that song about Vegemite, you know? And so I'm like, so what's the deal with Vegemite, right? And they're like, oh, mate, it's really good, right? And so I'm like, they're like, do you want to try some, right? And I'm like, I'll try shit. I'm one of these guys. I'll try food. You know, I won't. So I'm like, all right, I'll try some. So I take my MRE cracker and I said, put a little on it. And it put a little on. It gives me the packet and I put a little on. He goes, no, mate, you got to put a lot more on it. You got to slather it on there. Right? So I do it. I take a bite out of this. And obviously to me, it tastes like ass of an ass, you know, and I'm just like, this shit is fucking horrible. And I'm like, how do you guys eat this? You know, it's an acquired taste, mate, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, I wouldn't acquire this taste in 100 fucking years, you know? And he's like, if they give it to you from the day you're born, you will. I'm like, I'm sorry, but they got me good. Cause I was like, I'll take it. And they're like, no, you got to put more on.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah. The problem is I couldn't even get mad. I couldn't kick their ass. They're these tough commandos. You know, I was like, I just have to take it and get laughed at. But, man, that was horrible.
Yeah, no, we love it. I love it. My kids love it. Again, it's one, as he said, like, it's one of those things you got to be brought into it. So even well, our babies eat this stuff.
You guys have that from like day one.
Oh yeah,
like, that's
yeah.
one of the first things.
Yeah,
straight out the womb.
Your parents shove in your mouth, right? Yeah. So then it's cool to you.
Yeah.
But to me, I'm a soft American, man. I'm brought up on peanut butter,
yeah, peanut butter and jelly,
butter,
hot dogs, pizzas,
jelly, jam. You know, you guys got to be tough in Australia. Yeah. You guys live in the Outback, you know, it's all about survival. Yeah. In America, you know, it's all about what tastes good. That's why we have the obesity problem.
Yeah, that's it. Well, you guys actually own Vegemite, so.
You guys own Kraft.
Yeah, you own Kraft. So.
But
yeah.
With the obesity, I'm pretty sure Australia's got more fat bastards than America does per capita.
I don't know. I have to check that out because our obesity problem's crazy.
Yeah, we've got some.
We got some fat fucks here. Even if
you know, I'm working hard. I just turned 60, so I'm working hard on being that in shape old guy. You know,
yeah.
I just want to be able to do things. I just started training BJJ at 59.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm getting my ass beat every time, but it's cool.
Yeah, right.
You know, I took an elbow to the face the other day, but I'm just really enjoying it.
Here we go.
With those but yeah, I mean, I've lived in some places where they might as well just shoot the kids because they're just feeding them shit.
Yeah.
They're diabetics at six, you know, it's bad.
Unfortunately, it's not the kids' fault either.
It seems like in Australia, you know, and maybe I haven't been there yet. It's on my bucket list to go, but you know, everybody looks wiry and, you know, they gotta be rough out there, especially when you get outside the cities, you know, it doesn't look like, you know.
Sometimes they are. Sometimes they're shitheads.
You can't be too fat if you're riding kangaroos.
Hey, with those, the 14 years before you, did you say you got out the Army in 2002 and you joined the Air Force?
No, I got in the Air Guard. I got in the Air Force. I left the Navy in 91.
Yeah.
I was in the Army Guard till 96. Then I went to the Air Guard for that short period, and in September of 98 is when I came into the Air Force.
Yeah,
and I stayed
right.
in the Air Force till January of 11.
Yeah, gotcha.
And it was cool. I mean, because we were doing Northern and Southern Watch, which was really interesting. We thought it was like combat, you know, because you're like, we're flying around Eastern Turkey and the PKK is fighting the Turks. And, you know, we got Blackhawks and the Turks got Blackhawks. So we might get shot at, or we think we got shot at, you know, we're like, this is awesome, you know, but it was nothing, you know, but it was interesting stuff. And it got us in the mindset we needed to be in for when, you know, when the war finally happened. And then I don't know how much you guys know about Air Force Combat Rescue. You know, I don't know what Mike told you. And, you know, I heard some of the things, but I mean, you know, our main job is to pick up those down pilots who get shot down. You know, that's kind of what we're there for. But obviously that wasn't happening, thank goodness. So we were doing a lot of stuff. And then you start to become a victim of your own success because we have FLIR and we have the fuel probes. And so we can go longer range. We can go in crappier visibility at night and things like that. So we early part of the war, we pulled off a couple of tough missions, including the one I was on in Anaconda. So people are like, oh, wow. So then they just start sending you out every time the weather's shitty or there's a threat because we have guns and the medevac guys don't. Or so we just ended up doing all this crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And then we ended up supporting the tier one special ops guys. We basically were followed the 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment around for a while when they were doing hits, which was kind of cool. And then we did straight medevac to back up the Army. So we got to do a lot of cool things. And I mean, I got to, you know, I've said this before, you know, for me, I don't think of myself as anything, but I do know I'm not a coward. And that was important to me to prove to myself that I wasn't a coward, that I would perform in combat. And so, and then, you know, I enjoyed the work,
yeah.
You know, I really did. And I think like a lot of guys, you start to enjoy combat a little bit and you enjoy being downrange. You enjoy doing something that's important, you know. Doesn't matter if they think it's important at home, you know, it's important there and you're never going to, you know, I think one of the biggest problems a lot of us who leave the military have, I know I did, is you'll never do anything that cool or that important again.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's tough to kind of deal with. But, you know, I just love the work. I work with these incredible people. I've seen some incredible acts of bravery and, And I got to work with, you know, Australians, Brits, Danes, Germans, Italians, Romanians. I mean, you know, I can never look back on it as a bad experience other than, you know, being brokenhearted a couple of times because I lost some friends.
Yeah.
But I mean, that never ends. I'm losing, you know, I'm 10 years out. I'm still losing friends post-combat.
Yeah, we all are.
You know, that's kind of the curse of this business, I think.
Yeah. So let's get back to your deployments. You served in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Yeah, I did my Afghanistan tours early. I was there, obviously, initially 2002. And then I went back about a year later. And then I went back one more time to do an accident investigation, but I was only there about 3 weeks. And then the rest of my deployments were all Iraq. Basically, from 2004 to 2009, I did about five Iraq deployments. Well, I think, five Iraq deployments. And then I did one to the Kayak in Saudi Arabia just before we invaded Iraq. Yeah. And then I did about another, I think, four or five Iraq deployments.
Yeah, right. And obviously,
but they're short. They're like, we do 4 months, maybe 5 months. We don't do the long ones.
Yeah, gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah. And with those deployments that you did, both in Iraq and Afghanistan, they were with PJs in the back picking up.
Yeah, I've always had PJs in the back.
Doing many
deployments, we also had Rangers in the back because of the job we were doing.
Yeah, yep. Cool.
So we wanted a little extra security in the LZ. But it was always between two and three PJs in the back. You know, I love working with those guys. I mean, they never say no, no matter how crazy it is. I've been in these discussions where, like, if we go, we're all going to get killed. And like, okay. And the PJs are like, let's go. You know,
yeah.
I mean, I actually had an incident. If you heard the podcast during Anaconda, our flight lead, Tom Cales, said, look, guys, if we do this, there's a really good chance we're going to get fucked up. That was the quote.
Yeah, right.
And he goes, does anybody have a problem with that? And, you know, there's two crews standing around. The PJs are like, fuck no, let's go. And I'm thinking to myself, well, yeah, I do kind of have a problem with that. But, you know, you're not going to say anything.
Exactly.
But, I mean, I do remember that actual going. I remember my mind going, yeah, I kind of do have a problem with that. But you're going to go. I mean, there's no choice, you know. But the PJs have been awesome. I've loved working with them. And they all have that kind of personality that Mike has, you know, a lot of them are pretty gregarious. They like to have fun and, you know, they like to hit the gym and they like to wear really tight shorts, you know, which I make fun of.
Sounds like Mike then.
Yeah. It sounds like a Mike thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So again, you know, part of the bio that you sent us, and, you know, the podcast I was listening to, you actually were awarded the Distinguished Flying Cross.
Yeah, I was.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Listen, that was a really crazy mission, right? And it was crazy not so much because of the enemy was involved, but what made it frustrating and hard was the fog of war, right? You know, and you guys have experienced it. Just you're talking on five radios, conflicting information, bad grid coordinates. I mean, you name it, we were facing it. You know what I mean? And by the skill of the guy I was flying with, Tom Cahill, and all of us and us working together, we figured out where these three guys were. We were able to get them out. There was quite a bit of shooting. We landed in the wrong LZ. We got mortared. We had to throw guys off the helicopter because we landed in the wrong LZ. Fuck. And these three guys jump on. They think we're exfilling them. And the PJs are like, hey, sir, nobody's wounded. These guys are not wounded. And I'm like, oh, so these aren't the guys we're here to. And they're like, no, they just think we're exfilling them. So I'm like, they got to go. And so the PJs have to manhandle, like, I had to physically throw them out of the helicopter. It's comical now. But these guys are in the middle of a firefight. I'm sure they weren't having a rip. I'm sure they weren't excited about it. You know, and, it's like that scene in Apocalypse Now where the helicopter lands and that one guy's like, I'm not going. I'm not going. It was like that. They had to literally manhandle these guys. So in one mission, we just encountered so much confusion in addition to the enemy, you know, doing their thing. And just, we lucked out. We found these guys. The PJ saved their lives, and we landed with 8 minutes of gas. And it was the beginning of the war. So at that time, it was this holy shit mission, right? Well, I can tell you guys, as the war progressed, that kind of stuff literally happened on a daily basis. You know what I mean? It's for, you know, both from our community and the medevac guys and, you know, the other, you know, aviation units that were out there. So, I mean, listen, I was just along for the ride. I don't know. You know, I talking about the DFC is a very double-edged sword for me, man, because I'm very proud and happy to have been it. But I mean, I know so many more heroes and so many guys have done so much more than I have that, you know, it's, yeah, I got the DFC and it's cool. It's a cool accoutrement to my uniform. But I mean, you know, I'm a pretty cliche guy. I'm an old guy now. I don't have a lot of original thoughts. I'm like the real Dick Winter said in Band of Brothers, I wasn't a hero, but I served with a lot of heroes. I truly believe that, man. I do, with every fiber of my being. I mean, you know, I feel like I was lucky to be in the room with these guys. It's like when you, I played college football and I sucked, but I was really happy to be on the team. And that's kind of how I feel about that, you know, except I didn't suck. I knew I was a pretty decent pilot, I just was happy to be around those kind of people, man. Yeah. It was just inspiring all the time to be around these badasses, men and women, you know, because I flew with a lot of women. I'll tell you what, they put the argument about women in combat to rest completely. You know, I mean, we can argue about your women being the infantry and special ops, and we can argue physiology and all that, which I agree with. But I know some women who were straight up killers, man. They were down to throw down in combat. So, you know, I just got to work with some really amazing and cool people. I was just happy to be there. It was just a cool job.
Yeah, of course, man. And you're part of that cog. At the end of the day, that's the way you got to look at it as well. You're part of the mission and part of the cog moving forward. And it's a team effort. That's what the military is.
Exactly.
It's cool. You know, as you get older, and I'm entering the fourth quarter of life, you start to look back on certain things, man. And it's cool to work with these, you know, I got to work with a lot of, you know, bearded guys and operators from different countries. And, you know, when to earn their respect or more, it's not even the respect, it's their sort of confidence in you that they know that you'll do the job for them and come get them if something goes south. That's really cool. You know what I mean? To have people believe in you in that way. And I think about the people who got in a helicopter with me all the time, the PJs, the air crewmen, the other pilots. And I'm the biggest dope out there, man. And these people got in an aircraft with me in some of the craziest conditions, dark nights, shitty weather, people trying to kill us. And they trusted me enough to get in that aircraft with me, man. That means the world to me, you know, if you listen to other podcasts that I may have been on, I say this all the time. And again, I'm a pretty cliche guy, but my military service was a gift. It was a gift. And it was, you know, the honor and privilege thing you hear people say, absolutely. You know, I do. I say, people look at me like I'm crazy. Like I'm like, my military service was a gift. And having that weird, unusual career that I had, that was kind of cool too. Not the way I wanted it. You know, I drank the Marine Corps Kool-Aid. I'm still a Marine. I was wearing my Marine Corps t-shirt earlier today before I got on with you guys when I was out running errands. I mean, I'll die. Your Marine will be on my tombstone somewhere.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
But I've had this crazy career. I got to work with these people. And that's why I reached out to you guys, man. I like to tell my story on that because it's unusual. And people go like, oh, man, that's must have been nuts. But it was good. It was good. You know, it just got to work with these cool people. And that's, I get to meet guys like you and talk to guys like you, you know, and I love hearing the experiences that you guys had. And I have a few friends from the UK and I'm a little bummed out. You know, they don't treat their veterans that good over there.
No, they don't. No.
Or not like we get here. I don't know how it is in Oz, but
it's halfway.
Actually, it's funny. So that, cause Matt and I last night were chatting about this one today and I said, I wish Australia was like the US in the sense of they're so patriotic and they love their veterans, whether the Navy, Army, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard, whatever, you know, and they have so much respect and like they just, wherever they go, they're not like, if you're an Australian, you're patriotic, like it's classed by you're a bogan, you're a dickhead. So it's sort of sad.
You know, there's, I don't know, there's some people who make patriotism seem dopey, but you know, you got to think about it. You know, and Australia is very much like the United States. You know, you're a country that was founded by people who got kicked out of everywhere else. Right. So kind of like us. I'm not an expert on Australia, but you know, what I do know about it, there's a lot of similarities, you know, you're pretty multi-ethnic. You got a lot of immigrants from places where people were getting shit on.
Exactly.
It's not uncommon to see Greeks and Italians in Australia. Oh, yeah. You know what I
Middle
mean?
Middle Eastern. Things like
that. So,
yeah.
So, you know, we're this, but what I love, why I'm patriotic is because I don't know that I could have done the things I've done anywhere else. You know, I don't come from the right family or anything. You know, I just said, hey, I want to do this. And like the Marines were like, you could try. I mean, you don't look like much, but give it a shot. You know,
yeah.
I'm being honest. Like the first time I walked into a Marine recruiter when I was a kid, I wasn't even old enough to come in. He was like, you got a lot of growing to do, son. You know what I mean? You know, but they were like, hey, if you give it a shot, you know, and I mean, that's the cool thing about America that I like. And despite all the shit you hear, this is a place where if you're willing to work hard, most things you can get a shot at.
Yeah.
Anyway. And even in my post-military shit, you know, I was 50 something years old. I said, I want to be an actor. People are like, are you out of your fucking mind? Are you stupid? Are you this? I'm like, yeah, I'm going to give it a shot.
Good on you.
Yeah.
I ended up on a TV show.
Yeah.
I'm not, you know, and I'm still doing, I mean, and I think Australia's similar. You know, you got a lot of self-made people there.
Oh, yeah.
You don't necessarily have to come from a background to be able to succeed. You could, you know, you could not come from a wealthy family and be a lawyer or maybe a doc. You know, but people take that shit for granted because they haven't been anywhere.
Yeah.
They haven't seen how it is. Like Afghanistan's a perfect example.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine? I can't imagine. I thank God every day I was born in America with all its problems, with all the knuckleheads we have here, with all the political bullshit divisions that go on. Much better than being in a place where my little girl, if she reads, they're going to throw acid in her face.
Yeah, that's
exactly. 100%.
You know? And so it's just people aren't grateful, man. That's the problem. And they don't know and they take things for granted and they – you can't be mad at people if they don't have experiences.
Yeah.
The one thing about those of us who've been in the military is we've had these experiences that a lot of people don't have. You know, like I've had the opportunity to travel all over the world that I wouldn't have necessarily had regular, you know, coming from the background I have. So the reason I'm a real patriotic American is because I've seen how people live in other places, even Western Europe. Even I'm like, yeah, this is cool, but still not as cool as, you know, still not as cool as America.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
know, and in Australia, I'm like, could I live in Australia? I'm like, yeah, except everything there is trying to kill you. all these crazy, you know, every spider's deadly, every snake is deadly.
We got everything.
You know, that's, and maybe I watch too many nature shows because I am a nature show actor. I watch all those nature shows. I love them, man. But maybe I watch too many, and I'm like, God damn, man. Because out here, we got in Nevada, you know, we have rattlesnakes, scorpions, tarantulas, black widows. And I'm like,
MS-13.
Every summer to make sure your kids and your dog could go in the backyard here.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it's like in Australia.
But the good thing about Australia, though, Yogi, we don't have any land mammals that could, like, kill you. Like, we don't have wolf, we don't have, like, we don't have coyotes, bears. And, you know, we just got...
Yeah, mountain lions and stuff.
No, mountain lions with cougars.
we don't have that type of stuff.
It's got snakes and sharks.
Well, I should say it's rare, but I don't know if you guys saw it in the news there, but about a month ago, we had a mountain lion just wandering through a neighborhood here the other day Vegas. Yeah. There's pictures of it on all the doorbell cams and
someone shoot just, it?
Yeah, no, they tranked it and take it away. They won't. They really try not to kill the animals.
Yeah,
if they can, you know,
unlock
just try to move them unless they've killed somebody.
Yeah, right.
You
okay.
know, but,
yeah, yeah.
but you know, it's encroachment. You know, where we encroach on their you
course.
Know territory. I mean, I'm an animal lover, man. You know, I'm not against hunting or anything like that, but I'm like, listen, you know, people get attacked by grizzlies. I'm like, listen, if you're wandering around in the woods. And you start trying to fuck around with a grizzly, you're stealing your food, you're an idiot because he's 1,800 pounds and you're 140 pounds.
Yeah.
You're not, you know, we're not the top of the food chain.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, but you won't encounter those things as much. I worry about like sleeping and a spider bite me in the face and now I die. Like those are the things that freak me out. When I was in the Marines, man, I took a spider web to the face. And a giant ass spider, I don't think it was poisonous at all, But it was right here, and I was screaming like a schoolgirl. I'm a pretty deep voice guy. I was soprano that day.
Oh yeah, oh,
soprano.
I was screaming.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't like creepy crawlies. I don't like snakes. In the Marines, I had a water moccasin crawl over my boot while I was standing there. I mean, and I'm a city kid, so it took me a while to even get used to being in the woods. You know, I used to be scared. I was scared of the dark as an adult. The military taught me how to be comfortable in the dark, man, operating in the, because I'd never really been exposed to like what really can't see your hand in front of your face dark was. And when you're in the woods or the jungle, I've been in the jungles of the Philippines on a rescue exercise, noise. I was terrified, man. You know,
Yogi, whereabouts in the city did you grow up in New York?
I grew up in Manhattan. So, I mean,
it's pretty rough though.
You know, I got a funny story. When I met my wife, she's like, hey, if you want to impress my dad, mow the lawn. I'm like, I never mowed a lawn in my life. She's like, you never mowed a lawn. I'm like, no. She's like, you didn't have a backyard? I'm like, no, I didn't have a backyard. I grew up in an apartment building. The only grass I saw was in the park. You know, I mean, I didn't grow up in the suburbs. I'm a straight up urban guy. Like, I rode the subway every day. I got full pictures on of city me slicker. Sitting on the stoop. You know, just all that stuff. So it took me a while to get used to that. Again, I thank the military for that.
Yeah,
like now I'm comfortable in the woods. I know how to do little survival stuff. I know medical things that I never would have known, you know, and just all kinds of cool things I've learned, again, as part of being in the military that I don't think I would have learned.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
can we touch on the Philippine deployment? Quickly, I was going to ask you.
I lived there.
You lived there for
almost 3 years.
3 years, yeah. So obviously, with that, you don't have a chance to come back home at all, or you're there for the full time.
You're there with your you're stationed there, and so I went there for about 6 months, and then my wife came over.
Yeah.
You know, you live there, you work on the base, and then you live in base housing, which is pretty nice over there. I had a maid, a yard boy, a seamstress. You know, my wife could pick out anything out of, let's say, Vogue magazine, and the exchange had they had a whole section with materials because Philippines had so many, everybody had a seamstress or whatever. So women would do is they'd buy material, they'd show a picture from a magazine to the seamstress
and build it.
And they'd have that.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, so I had a yard boy. It was just this guy. He came, he had a push lawnmower, some pruning shears. This guy kept the lawn better than any landscaping company. He would climb and get coconuts out of the tree for me and open them up for me and my little girl. I think we paid him $5 every time he came, and he liked hot dogs. So either me and my wife would grill him up some hot dogs while he was
there. Yeah, awesome. When you and
they're poor people. I mean, our maid, her house got wrecked in a typhoon, and they didn't like you taking stuff off the base to give to the locals because of the black market. Well, me and my wife, we bought about $500 worth of groceries, and we hid them in our truck, in our car, because they would inspect it when you left. And we were smuggling drugs. We were hiding it under the seats and everything. And we took it to her house so she had food, because her house got, you know, her village where she lived got really, really damaged. So, but she was a really cool woman, and you know, she had a daughter, and you know, she would come over. So we were, you know, we were really concerned about her. So we were going to make sure she was okay. Yeah, it was great. I lived like a king. It's a beautiful country. People are nice. You know, again, I mean, when you're older, it's easy to look back, man, but just getting this, I would have never gone to the Philippines on my own. Even Afghanistan and Iraq. I mean, there's beautiful things about those places. I'm sure you'll agree. Afghanistan aesthetically is a beautiful country.
Yeah. And the history in Iraq is amazing. The history in Iraq, as in buildings and mosques and
getting to see Babylon.
Yeah, man, I've been.
If you're a biblical person, I'm not. I'm a heathen. I got to look up to see the curve. But if you are a biblical, I mean, there's all kinds of amazing history, and some of the people were cool.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's as a pilot, I didn't get to interact as much with the Iraqis, but the ones I met, you know, seemed like decent people.
Yeah,
Afghanistan
definitely.
Was a little tougher because I was always, I just didn't I didn't trust a lot of them.
Definitely.
I wasn't into that man love Thursdays, you know. And they would be inviting me places, and I'm like, I don't know if I'm going with these. With these Afghani cops anywhere.
Yeah.
I want you to come have tea with them, and I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because one of my mates in our platoon, his family from the Philippines, so he looks Afghani in a way, and they wanted to trade him for a cow. They were trying to give us a cow so they could take him. We're like, all right, yeah, we'll take the cow.
We tried,
but he didn't want to bar of it.
Oh man, that's funny. Well. Hey.
Yogi.
I mean, there was some it's a crazy place, you know, and you know, I think the mistake we make in the West is we look at these places and we go, oh, they have these effed up things, and they are effed up. But the problem is we think we'll just come over with like democratic fairy dust and they'll be like, okay, we'll stop all these things culturally we've been doing for 10,000 years because you sprinkled USA fairy dust on us, you know, like corruption. They're so corrupt. I'm like, this is how they do business for literally 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right.
You're not going to stop them from being corrupt by that's just my joke. It's like, we come over like, hey, the USA democracy fairy dust. And boom, they think it's going to change and everything's okay.
Yeah, that's right.
And oddly enough, we always pick the guys that have no intestinal fortitude to back. Like, I was, you know, watching about all the gains the Taliban are making. And I'm like, how come the Afghanis on our side won't fight? Like the Taliban
scared.
Fight.
They're probably,
you know, like people, because I get these questions. They're like, the Taliban, they don't like to fight. They're cowards. They just plant bombs. Like, oh, no, they'll fight. You know, I've seen guys like with an AK try to take on three little birds.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I'm out for them, but, you know, and yet the guys we back.
Yeah.
You know. You're like, hey, we need to go out. You know, we're back in the special forces guys up, and they're supposed to go out on a mission with the partner force. Then they're like, we're canceling the mission because the partner force didn't show up.
Yeah, yeah.
What are your thoughts on Biden pulling out the troops? Then obviously us Australians left the other month.
You know, I'm mixed feelings. Obviously, look, I don't. You know, 20 years to be at war is a long fucking time.
Mm. Oh yeah.
I mean,
a lot of money.
A lot of money, a lot of sadness. I mean, you know, I've lost friends there, but I also, again, we always do this. It's like, we don't learn from the past. It's like, we should have prepped for this.
Yeah.
And we didn't. And so now we're leaving. The folks we trained up and poured money, ridiculous amounts of money into training, this, that, and the other. 10% are worth the shit. 90% aren't. And, you know, it's going to be a repeat sort of a Vietnam. So
yeah,
it's sad to me. I'll tell you, I didn't think it would bug me because when they were talking, I was like, I'm 10 years removed from that. You know what I mean? It's done for me already. But then they were putting the map up and I'm like, well, wait, I was there and I was there and I was there. And we're just pissing on it.
It's just a waste.
You know, and it's same with Iraq. Like, I was like, how can ISIS take over a country when they're outnumbered 4-1 by the Iraqi army? You know what I mean? And that really bothered me because I the places, the Daesh, ISIS, whatever took over, yeah. I was really intimate with, you know, that I spent a lot of time. And it's frustrating. And we're letting a lot of our partners down, the Iraqis and the Afghanis who work for us. We kind of leave them out to dry at the mercy of the bad guys. You just got a bad history with that, and it leaves a bad taste in your mouth. But
yeah,
I mean, look, I was a professional, man. That was my job. I think the job I had makes this sting a little easier because my job was saving lives, and I know I did that, you know, and I know I got the, there's people walking around because of me, and then more importantly, the stuff my crews and PJs and stuff did. So I'm very proud of being part of that. We needed to go in and kick some ass, but, you know, I don't know what happened after that. I you know, I don't know what the thought process was. And I still can't believe that we couldn't have left the place a little better than we found it. and we're going to be back. That's the problem. We're going to be back.
Yeah, that's it, mate. It's a never ending circle.
That's the problem. You know, we're all, you know, the westernized countries, and you guys are Five Eyes. So you guys, the UK, Canada, a few others, we're the guys who are always going to be in these places.
Yeah.
You guys got your own problems, but you're bound to us. So when we go and get our ass in a sling, you guys are bound by our treaties to say, okay, now we got to send our guys exactly. over there, which you don't really want to do. And I don't blame you guys, but, you know, that's part of the alliance, right?
Yeah.
And we're always glad to have you from the warfighter perspective, but we're always going to be dealing with this. And that's the problem. You know, the three of us here know right now, as sure as we know, we're going to eat dinner later, or I don't know what time it is there. We're going to have a meal later. We know that we'll end up back in Afghanistan for sure.
Yeah.
And probably Iraq or the environs thereof at some point as well.
Yeah. That's just going to happen.
I mean, because here's what's going to happen.
Exactly.
The Taliban will take over. ISIS is now involved. And it'll be another place where they can plan attacks on the West, right?
Exactly.
So something's going to happen either here, there, Europe, right? And then we're going to have to go back. You know, and that's what it sucks. And I just think we could have done a better job, you know? And yeah. What I learned, the one thing I learned is I'm a dumbass. I'm not a smart guy. But I don't think all these people we elect to make these decisions and all these think tanks are any smarter than I. Because Iraq is a classic example. You know, I'm a history major. So I geek out on history. I was a World War II geek. You know, I admit it. Like I still, you know, I watch all the documents. I geeked out on that stuff. And so we kick Saddam out and we go, we'll make this like Germany after the war and we'll de-bathify it and we'll disband the army and it'll work out good, right? But what nobody thought of is, and it worked in Japan too, is that Japan and Germany were both nationalistic countries, fairly homogeneous countries, right? So that was easy. You know, we were like apple pie, USA, democracy. MacArthur treated them nice. They thought he was like a god. And so it was easy to get that going there. In Iraq, where it's a tribal country, it's not a nationalist country. You got Shia and Sunni Muslims.
Yeah.
You have different tribes within those two factions of Islam. And then you disband the army, and so you unemploy a bunch of people, and now you're surprised a week later you have an insurgent. You know what I mean? And I'm like, I could have told you that.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm telling you, it's the guy who's telling you he's a moron. Not that I'm such a smart guy. I'm just like, well, yeah, that's obvious that it didn't work out that way. You know, and now, you know, you hear these guys, you know, you hear them talking about it. Was there an insurgency, and why is this, and why is that? You know, the couple of the generals will come on and go, this is why. And, you know, and you're like, yeah. And then you got all these other people. They're like, well, we didn't. And no, it's just, we just do stupid shit, man. And unfortunately, I don't mean to run my mouth about this, but unfortunately, you know, we do this dopey stuff and we don't learn from the past.
No, definitely not. No, mate.
Vietnam's the same.
Yeah, Vietnam's the same. They're all the same. Like, it's just,
you know, and it is a racket. Look, I'm a proud military guy, but it's a racket, man. These wars made a lot of people a lot of fucking money.
Oh yeah,
fuck, 100%.
You can't like just gloss by that. I mean, no. You know, the military industrial complex is a real thing.
That's it.
You know, and there was a lot of money to be made, so there was a lot of incentive to keep these wars going
for us. That's as it. Well, though, soldiers and sailors and airmen, there was money for us to be made. You know. People went out and bought houses, boats, jet skis. You know, this sounds trivial, but, you know, back in the time where everyone was like, fuck, yeah, we're going overseas and because we got fucking paid good for it. Here in Australia, we're getting paid phenomenal. And plus it was tax-free, which is even better. But obviously, the bigger
– But you know what? I'm glad about that because I'm glad that I'd like to see the warfighter rewarded, you know,
yeah, in of course. A monetary 100%.
Way. See, that's the thing. You guys are talking about, you know, that you're treated so well in America. Yeah, we are. But, you know, that thank you for your service thing, it's kind of it's because they don't know what else to say because they're so far removed from it. You know, and they feel this guilt or this thing, so they say something. Like for me, I always hated that because to me, I was scamming the government. I was like, these assholes are letting me fly helicopters and paying me? these guys are stupid. You know, so I thought about it. You know, I was like, they're paying me. Yeah. I was like, this is the best scam going. And I still kind of feel that way. I was like, in a weird way, I was like, man, that was a good deal for 20-something years.
Well, yeah. It's part of the gift, though, Yogi. As you were saying before, like, the gift of the ally, Australian Defence Forces, you're getting paid to travel. If you're in the Navy, you get paid to go all over the world. The Army, you get paid to drive tanks, to shoot shit, whatever, what I mean?
Yeah.
It's one of those jobs, and every day I still think about it, when I left. I've been out for nearly 5 years now. But yeah, being in the Navy was fucking great. You're getting paid to travel around the world with your mates and get pissed and chase chicks. So.
and again, it's an what's weird, and this is kind of weird. And again, you guys are still young, but you'll experience it when you get older. I start to interact with peers my own age, and a lot of these people are successful, really successful. And even on the acting side, you'll run into a couple of folks, and they are sort of envious because they never got to do it. You know what I mean? Or they didn't do it. Like, I have a couple of friends that are always like, oh, I should join the Marines with you. And I'm like, yeah, but your mom said no, and you didn't do it because your mom said no. these experiences we had were really cool.
Yeah.
And I can try to be more articulate, but that's really what it comes down to, man. They were really cool and fun, and we got to do stuff that a lot of people don't get to do. And as I get older, I cherish that more and more. I realize that I was really blessed. And that's why, like, I do joke around. Like, I think it was a racket, because it's good. But I want to see, I'm glad to hear in Australia, again, because I'm not familiar. I'm glad to hear you got a lot of good tax-free bennies. You come back from a 6-month deployment, you got a wad of cash in your pocket. Either you can invest it in Bitcoin or you can blow it on hookers. But at least you have the right. I know guys who did smart shit with their money.
Yeah.
Probably not one of those guys.
But it was one of those jobs.
Kind of more into the latter category of,
one of those.
I might have helped a few strippers put their kids in school here and there.
Oh, you're honest about it.
Back in flight school for sure. But I supported those single moms.
Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, we've been talking for a good hour, it's been awesome.
It has been fun.
Awesome. And it's good to see that, pilots like yourself are real people. And quite funny too.
They aren't just nerds.
Nerds.
You'll see if we hang out. I'm just a dopey guy. I'm just a dopey guy who got lucky, man. I've been real lucky at the end of the day. I've been blessed with poor timing, but it always ended up working out. All that multi-service stuff was just a result of my timing always sucks.
Yeah.
But you got to make lemonade out of lemons, man, and just make the best of it.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, 10 years out from it all, it was great, man. And
yeah.
The cool thing, I get to talk to guys like you, man. That's why I love doing these podcasts stuff. We're shooting this shit from Australia.
States. Exactly.
That's pretty cool to me.
Exactly.
It is.
So now you're an emergency services pilot.
I fly EMS helicopters 2 weeks. It's a great gig. I work 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off. So I'm half the month off.
And that's awesome.
That's just around Vegas, is it? Like Nevada?
No, I actually work in Arizona.
Oh, Arizona, yep.
I work in Yuma, which is straight south, about 300 miles right on the Mexican border.
Yep.
And no one wants to live there. So about 3/4 of the pilots live other places. They got a house for us down there, a really nice house. You work 12-hour shifts, 14 days straight. It's a busy base, so we do a lot of flying, so you don't get bored.
Yeah.
And I like to fly nights. I always trade out with the other guys so I can fly straight nights.
Yeah, right.
And then it allows me to do, I also do some safety consulting for the Air Force, so it allows me to work on that. And then, when I'm lucky enough to get auditions and stuff, I can do a self-tape down there or things like that. And then, I'm pursuing the acting thing, I've been lucky the last couple of weeks. I had a couple of auditions, so we'll see what happens. And you guys got Hulu?
No.
You guys got Hulu in Australia?
No.
What is it?
Hulu. H-U-L-O. It's one of those streaming services.
Oh, okay. No, we don't have that.
No, we don't have it. No.
Oh, okay. Because I thought Hulu was international.
It probably is, but
if you ever get to stream New Amsterdam, it's one of our hospital shows we have.
Yeah, no, it's on Foxtel.
It's on Foxtel.
It's on our
Sky or whatever you guys call it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pay TV.
It's on Pay TV. Season 2, episode 7.
Season 2, episode 7.
Yeah, right. Now I'll watch it.
I'll bloody.
2 weeks off. On it's cool. You get paid to take naps again because you're just sitting around waiting for something to happen, right?
Yeah, gotcha.
So the gift.
Probably one of the only jobs in the world where you can actually take a nap and get paid for it.
Oh, the Navy was like that. Yeah.
What'd you say?
The Navy was like that. You get paid to sleep.
Yeah. When we were deployed at sea, we would say if you went on a 6-month deployment, you say if you sleep 12 hours a day, you're only gone 3 months.
Yeah, I've never heard that before.
Yeah, that's a good way to think of it.
I remember those shipboard days, and as a pilot, we didn't have to do any of the other shipboard stuff like the surface warfare officers. Yeah, so yeah. We weren't working unless you had the duty. You were watching a movie, working out, or sleeping. That was it.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. Right. Go All right. Navy. Well. For our guests, we have generally two final questions that we dish out. And obviously the first question, just in regards to our podcast, you know, we designed this podcast so we could give, you know, veterans or just anybody in general that listens to our podcast a bit of motivation, you know, and advice on how to complete their goals and do what they want to do, you know, live life and live it to the max. Pepsi Max.
And you're a bloody good, you're a great example. You come from like Manhattan, a single mom, a working mom, and you were a pilot in all three services, and now you're an emergency service pilot as
exactly.
well.
Exactly. So what advice can you give to people that, you know, any of our listeners to complete what they want to do?
Dress sharp. And it's going to seem kind of simple, but it, you know, first of we were talking about this, I'm part of a veterans group called Merging Vets and Players. And we meet once a week, and we're just talking about values and principles. And the big one to me is don't quit. Okay, if there's something you want to do, don't be discouraged. Pursue it. Do the work that has to be done to do it. It's not going to happen easy, but don't quit. Because here's one thing I can guarantee you: if you say you want to do something, I don't care what it is, Indy 500 race car driver or graphic artist. There's what I guarantee you is there's somebody who's going to be there to tell you you can't do it. That's guaranteed.
It's true.
You got to drown out those voices, ignore them, do what you want, pursue it, work hard, and don't let anyone discourage you. And it's going to suck because life is going to kick you in the nuts all the time. But if you work, and I know it sounds cliche, but I'm a classic example of it. If you work towards the goal and don't quit, it will happen. You know, and for the veterans out there, it's tough. I had a hard time adjusting. You know, for the veterans out there, you got to find that new mission, that new call, something that gets you excited. And it doesn't matter what it is, man. Doesn't necessarily, you know, you could have been a badass SAS guy, and maybe now you want to be an artist of some sort, yeah. You know, or whatever. Just find that thing that gets you a little excited. Probably won't get you as excited as what you used to do.
Yeah.
There is a point where you'll never be that cool again, but that's okay. It doesn't mean you can't be cool.
Yeah.
You know, but just find that other mission. And, yeah. You know, if it's helping other folks, if it's building things, and find what gets you excited when you go, damn, I'd really love to do that. And then work to do it. It's all simple stuff, man. I'm not a PhD. I'm a doctor of dumbassery, you know, but just don't quit. Like we were talking about it, man. So this is the one thing I do is, and slightly off topic is, no matter what you want to do, there'll be that fucking person who's going to tell you you can't do it.
Yeah.
And that's the person who now created the goal for you. Because your only goal in life now is to make that person feel like a complete and utter moron.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really good when that happens. Because in my case, it's happened a bunch. Because I was an asshole, so nobody thought I would do any of the stuff I said I was going to do.
Yeah.
Man, I loved it when I showed up in my dress blues or when I was my naval aviator wings, all that stuff, man. Because they were just like, and that's the best feeling in the world.
Yeah, exactly.
So just work hard, don't quit. And, you know,
get it done.
Do the work. Nothing comes easy. Nothing good's going to come easy without work and struggle.
No,
nothing that's going to make you happy and be worth. And even the little things like, your jobs in the military. You know, if you were working towards being in some special unit that has a selection process, making it through that selection process and earning whatever beret, badge, title, whatever that you have, you had to earn that. And anything worthwhile, you got to earn. So do the work.
Yeah. No, exactly.
That's cliche. I'm sorry. I don't have anything that's really cool, but it's true.
The simpler it is, the better it is. And that's the way it should be done. Do the work, get the reward, simple. And don't quit, obviously.
Yeah, and try not to be an asshole if you can avoid that.
Yeah,
That's it. And the last question, what do you have in plan for the future? Obviously, it's probably acting. And,
yeah, it's going to be the next Hugh Jackman or?
You know, we'll see. I'm more like
Bruce Willis.
I don't
want
to be like a regular on a TV show, you know, something like that. But we'll see. It's such a tough, crazy business that I'm just going to plug away until they say, dude, we're closing shop, go home.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Just I've gotten lucky, and I think, I have a modicum of talent, so I'm going to pursue that. I still really enjoy flying and aviation, so I don't feel like I have to have a real job, so I'm going to stick with that until I get a little tired of it. Stay healthy. I had a little health scare early this year, had a little prostate cancer. I had to deal with that. So, just try to stay healthy, try to be in the best shape I can. I really, you know, for an old fart, I'm out there. I do work out pretty crazy, you know, but that's what keeps me going mentally here. You know, you guys know who David Goggins is, right?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I'm a devotee, man. I run when it sucks. Like I'm doing shit and all I tell myself is it's supposed to suck. And
yeah.
Do something. Here's enough. Do something you don't want to do every day.
Yeah.
I got that. I read that from him. I've heard it on Rogan. I've heard it on a lot of things. That's something I would pass on. Do something you don't want to do every day, especially on the physical side.
Yeah.
You know, staying healthy is the key. If you don't have your health, you don't have shit. You know, that's an old person thing. They say in the United States, all the old Italians and Jewish grandmothers tell you that and shit, but it's true. So stay healthy, eat right, work out, you know, limit your time on the couch and just stay active.
Yeah.
But that's my goal. Stay healthy. Stay flying as long as I can and hopefully make a living as an actor.
Yeah.
Make a living.
Like, yeah, that'd be cool.
Do it like I can actually say this is how I make my living, you know, but we'll see.
Well, one day when you need a bodyguard, mate, give me a call because I run a security company. So I'll look after you.
Yeah. Please reach out when you come in, man. I'd love to get together.
No, definitely.
And meet you in person, man.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed that. And hopefully I'll need a bodyguard. I like to think I still one of these idiots who like to think I could take care of myself, but you know what? If I ever am successful enough, I might as well just say, hey, might as well have some.
Yeah.
I used to like that in the military. I'd always grab the two biggest NCOs or the two biggest PJs when I wanted to do something, and I'd say, come with me and just stand there and look mean mug, whoever I'm talking to. And I'd just have them stand there. So, I'd love to have some bodyguards someday.
No, well, I reckon you will. You'll get there. You'll get there, mate. Awesome. Well, it's been awesome.
Thank you so much for having me on.
No worries,
really appreciate it. Give me the opportunity to tell my story. I think it's highly undistinguished, but a little interesting. And I enjoyed meeting both of you and talking to you guys. It's awesome.
Likewise.
Talk to two fellow veterans.
Appreciate it. We'll keep in contact.
A great country like Australia. And I don't think I'm ever going to change my mind on Vegemite, though, guys. I can't lie.
I'll bring some over.
Yeah.
I'll bring some over for you. All right, man.
All right,
thanks for your time.
Be safe. Stay safe out there. And I'll talk to you guys soon. Thank you again.
Yeah, legend.
Happy day. See
you,
buddy.
Mate.
See you, man.
Yogi Bear, three service Yogi Bear.
Yeah.
Slash actor.
Yeah.
This was season 2, episode 7, didn't you say?
Yeah. How good was it? Like, it's interesting to speak to pilots because they have, especially military pilots, just the stories they, you know, that
have a huge, huge range of stories.
You know, you see movies, et cetera, and whatever, you know, even if you are just a civilian, you see the movies of pilots and stuff. You don't see too much about chopper pilots, except in the old Vietnam movies.
Yeah, that's right.
Even then, none of it was tailored towards, you know, around them. They fly in and chop the bamboo up and pick up whoever they need to. And
exactly right. Exactly.
But, you know, he got the DFC, the Distinguished Flying Cross, for an act, you know, where they basically, the flight commander come down and said, boys, we got to go do this job or, you know, and if we do this job, I mean, there's high chance we're not coming back from it. So they basically said, fuck it, let's get in this fucking chopper, let's go pick up who we need to and let's get out of there.
Exactly.
So they ended up doing the job and under fire, et cetera, in a hot LZ, and he ended up getting the DFC for it, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and now he's out of the Defence Force, did you say? Yeah.
Yeah, so he's out of the military now and he's retired. He
runs a rescue chopper.
Yeah, he works for, you know, the EMS, so essentially like the paramedics / Westpac. You know, he's a pilot, so he still flies out of Arizona 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, he said.
Yep.
And, you know, when he's not doing that, he's living in Vegas, probably living the Vegas life.
Oh, fuck yeah. MGM Grand.
MGM. And just hanging out with, all, you know, all the DJs, just raving every weekend. Probably not. Probably not. But
I hope so. But, yeah, that was Yogi.
And, yeah, Yogi. And he's an actor.
You can find him on our Instagram. We'll tag him on his post.
Yeah, we'll tag him in on our social media posts. He's on Instagram. And if you want to listen to our podcast, head to Zero Limits podcast.com. Otherwise, you can head to our Instagram and Facebook, same thing, Zero Limits Podcast. And also, you know, do a search on Spotify or Apple.
Yes,
and,
correct.
Same thing. And you'll find all our previous podcasts and obviously this one. And if you can, you know, jump on an Apple podcast and leave a review, because the more reviews you get, the more exposure we get. And if you can recommend anyone that you correct. Think of that can come onto the show, someone with a hectic story, doesn't have to be military.
No.
We are military themed because of our backgrounds, but it doesn't have to be military.
Adventurers. Businessman, maybe.
I don't know. People, I know the, anyone.
You come from a junkie.
An astronaut.
You work at Woolworths, yeah. You're a junkie, now you work at Woolies. I don't know.
That's a story.
All right, guys. See you in the next one.
Catches.
Wait. Now, quickly, just before you go, I want to tell you about Three Zeroes Coffee. Now, as you know, I like my coffee how I like my men, long and black. However, lately, I've moved into the cold brews. I'm loving it, obviously, because the weather here in Australia at the moment is quite hot. So what I've been doing is using the Seasoned Campaigner pour-over filter bags. Literally rip open the packet, put the filter bag over my coffee mug, a few ice cubes, pour in some hot water, let it cool down, add a sugar or two just to make it sweet, and I fucking love them. Honestly, you get the kick that you need out of the caffeine, and the taste is great. So if you want to get yourself a supply of coffee, head over to 30scoffee.com.au. From there, you can choose whatever you want. You've got the beans, you've got the pour-over filter bags, got some merchandise. And just to let you know that a percentage of their sales is forwarded to organisations that support first responders. So while you're getting your coffee, you're doing a good deed by getting some of this money to the first responders and where it needs to go. While you're there, don't forget to use the discount code 3ZLimits. Now, look in our bio, you see that discount code, use it. Get your discounts. So again, jump onto 30scoffee.com.au and grab yourself a supply.